since NAFTA. Gordon Lafer is professor at the University of Oregon. He's professor of labor studies and political science. He was a congressional staffer in 2009 and 10. He worked for the Committee on Education and Labor, in the House of Representatives. Gordon Lafer, good to have you on our show.
Good to be here.
What can you tell us about Oklahoma?
First of all, nationally, what the actual scientific economic evidence shows is that the impact of adopting a right-to-work law, all other things being equal, is to lower wages and benefits by about $1,500 a year per person, both union and non-union workers, and after controlling for different costs of living in the state. So $1,500 a year less in wages and benefits while doing nothing to improve job growth. And let me just say from the beginning, the idea of lowering wages and benefits, that is the point of right to work according to the people who are supporters of it. The Indiana Chamber of Commerce this year put out a report advocating right to work, and they said the problem with unions is that people with unions make higher wages and benefits, and according to them, that's unattractive to investors. And so the idea is a very high-stakes gamble, which is that people in Indiana will cut their wages and benefits by undermining unions in the hopes that that attracts manufacturers in from out of state. And the single biggest problem with that is that if that ever worked, it doesn't work anymore in the globalized economy. Because companies that are primarily going to move from one place to another because of low wages now are moving to China or Mexico. They're not moving from one state to another within the country. And that's why the case of Oklahoma is so important, because Oklahoma is the only state to have newly adopted right to work in the globalized economy since NAFTA. They did in 2001. In Oklahoma, just like the same kind of claims that Mr. Roberts is repeating, which is kind of anecdotal, I can't name anything, I don't have any data, but trust me, about, you know, site location consultants saying the state is being redlined. Legislators in Oklahoma were told by a site location consultant that 80% of the companies wouldn't come there because it wasn't right to work, and they would see an 80% increase in the number of companies coming into the state if they went right to work. Well, in the 10 years since then, the number of new companies opening up shop in Oklahoma instead fell by a third. And these are not my numbers. These are straight from the Oklahoma Department of Commerce, and they're not contested by anybody. So I think this is not something where we, especially legislators, have to rely on anecdotal information, because there's statistical information. There's also surveys of employers that protect their anonymity. Area Development Magazine is the primary magazine of the site location consultant industry. They do an annual survey that focuses primarily on small, low-wage manufacturers, which is the main target of right-to-work policy. Last year, those employers, and again, it's a survey of employers themselves, not of lobbyists or advocates, they rank right-to-work 16th as a factor in their location decisions. It's never ranked in the top 10.
What are the others that are more important?
The things that are more important make sense. It's like, how close am I to my suppliers or my customers? How close am I to a major highway or port if I need it? What's the cost of real estate and construction? And some of the things Mr. Roberts mentioned, what's the tax policy? What kind of deal is the state going to give me? Those are the things that really determine location decisions, and they make sense.
Given his comment about the protractor of 500 miles from Indianapolis and the fact that the trucking industry is relied on to bring supplies and so on to manufacturers, is there an argument there that things might be different in Indiana than there were in Oklahoma?
No, because you're basically looking at the same, you know, it's the same question. I mean, it's the same manufacturers who respond to that survey. And by the way, that survey was for low-wage manufacturers. When you look at higher tech, higher-wage manufacturers, there's another annual study put out, again, by Nobody Political, that ranks states according to their favorability for higher tech, higher wage manufacturing, which is what every state these days is concentrated on getting, both because the jobs pay more and because they're less likely to go abroad. In that study, 9 of the top 10 states are non-right to work, because those companies are not interested in saying, we'll have a high turnover workforce, we just want to pay them low. They're saying, we want a highly paid, highly skilled, low turnover workforce, because they're going to make their profits not on low wages, but on innovation or marketing or something else. So to say to people in Indiana, we want to undermine unions, cut wages and benefits, and trust us based on anecdotes that this is going to bring companies into the states, when both what employers themselves say in surveys and what all of the actual rigorous economic data shows, to me seems like not sound policy. I mean, at the anecdotal level, it's a big economy. I know there are employers who say They only want to operate union because it's higher skill and lower turnover. I'm sure Mr. Roberts is right that anecdotally there are some employers who are anti-union, and that's important to them. But a business wouldn't make decision on the basis of anecdotes, and neither should policymakers when there actually is data available.
Gordon Lafer again at the University of Oregon, formerly with the Committee on Education and Labor in the House of Representatives at a time when the Democrats were in control. Michael Wolff is an associate professor of political science at Indiana University, Purdue University, and Fort Wayne. Thank you so much for being on our program.
Sure. It's great to be here.
Is there a broader issue here than just Indiana?
Oh, I think so. I think this reaches broadly. I mean, we've seen Arizona follow up here. This has been in the news in Wisconsin. I think that this is really a thought that Republicans have an advantage across the nation right now in state legislatures, and this is something they've believed in. I think Mitch Daniels is an example of that as a Republican leader, nationally known. He gave the response to the president, after all, that it's probably something much more broadly and much more thought of as an important policy element.
But he apparently had to be talked into it, because when he first ran and when he spoke to the union audience in 2006, he was against it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think this is partially a shift in Mitch Daniels over time. When he first ran, he was a very consensus-oriented candidate, and he, you know, said things like this, and he truly did. But it's hard, you know. This is a guy who started in the Reagan budget office. He was himself the budget director for George Bush, so he probably likely has believed this at some level, even if early on it didn't seem would have paid off. You know, I mean, other kind of things early in his administration, he tried to privatize the social services and other things. So I think he's a believer in the marketplace, and think he's a believer in some of the conservative economic issues. And so whether or not it made sense at the time with a legislature that would not have been able to pass this due to the breakdown of party, that it was probably not going to make sense. But I don't believe that necessarily this is some kind of a switch in Mitch Daniels. I think he probably has believed this, but just the feasibility of it wasn't there.
What about other states? Will there be efforts between now and November, do you think? Or if Republicans win big in November, will there be further efforts after that to establish right-to-work laws in different states?
Well, that's the key here. I mean, do you take the model of Indiana or the model of Ohio, where the governor really is taking down the chin for doing this? And a lot of it will probably have to do with the relative strength of labor. There's not a whole lot of states left, probably, where there isn't much more controversy when you would make this move. Indiana, while it's huge for manufacturing, I mean, per capita manufacturing is larger than anywhere else. But its manufacturing hasn't necessarily always been in the way that, say, Michigan's has been, concentrated in one industry, or Pittsburgh or something like that. It's been spread out in kind of strange ways. So you've had the RV industry, for example, that was heavily dependent on the Amish or others. It's been distillated, in other words, from any center or one single manufacturer. And as a consequence, probably labor didn't build up around one area as it has elsewhere. So I think the labor situation in Indiana, while certainly we're hearing them today and we'll probably hear them this weekend, probably hasn't had the same unifying voice as it would in Michigan. I mean, if this were tried in Michigan, it would be a whole different story. I think there would be, you know, much more of kind of a civil war going on than in Indiana. So I don't know how many states are left that would be willing to kind of take this plunge and have a political leader do this.
You talked about Mitch Daniels' belief as if this were an article of faith. Do you think it is? Are you one who thinks the evidence is all on the other side?
Oh, I don't know. You know, I think that Mitch Daniels certainly has a position on this, and I think the situation changed, as I mentioned. I don't know. He interestingly has said recently, I don't know if your other guests have said that, he said, well, this won't change anything for any workers, but it will just improve our chances, and I don't know how you square that. So, he has to have known what this will mean, that this will mean bargaining power for workers goes down. I think one of your guests said that earlier, or otherwise, why would you have done this?
Michael Wolff, again, excuse me, at the Indiana University, Purdue University in Fort Wayne. I want to go back to Ed Roberts at the Indiana Manufacturers Association. What about the evidence that this does lower wages and benefits? Is that really good for Indiana?
No. If it if it were fact, but I'm a little tired of people running averages on states who didn't start where we start. You know, we are the number one manufacturing state in the country in terms of the gross domestic product contributed, in terms of the percentage of wages and percentage of jobs. This isn't Oklahoma. This isn't Louisiana. You're not starting this out in 2012 in Idaho or Iowa. You're starting it in Indiana. It's a not the same kind of world. We are the first industrial state in the true industrial heartland of this country to adopt right to work. By the way, the professor from Fort Wayne, Mitch, said in the Star this morning, I believe, this law won't be a magic answer, but we'll be far better off. I respect those who have objected, but they have alarmed themselves unnecessarily. No one's wages will go down. No one's benefits will be reduced, and the right to organize and bargain is untouched and intact. This bill only says you cannot compel people against their will to pay a third party in order to work.
But wages and benefits have gone down in other states where...
But not in Indiana. They don't know that about Indiana.
So you're saying Indiana is unique. It's unique and different.
Unique. It is very much unique and different. It's in the Midwest, and it's the most manufacturing-intensive state in the country.
Michael Wolff, what do you say to that?
Well, he's true about the manufacturing, but we'll see about this. It is an article of faith to say that nothing will change as far as bargaining. I mean, that is, and I do, this is Mitch Daniels. I do think that he is, as you heard in the response to the State of the Union, he is somebody who believes in consensus. And so I'm not disagreeing with that. But what I'm saying is, how can bargaining not change? I do think that we will see a change in bargaining. I mean, even if a union is, when you change the rules on that, that is. And so I'm not saying he's being disingenuous. I'm just saying I think that portion of it, by definition, will be changed.
Now, you're saying then, too, that this is primarily a political issue, it sounds like to me, that Republicans want to implement as long as they are in power. Is it then really aimed at the unions and thereby at the Democrats?
Well, there's certainly an element to that, and I think Mitch Daniels believes, and I think that your other guest here said that this will improve the economic situation of the state. Indiana's had a lot of manufacturers move in. We've had a lot of companies. If you listen to the radio, there's companies moving to Indiana from neighboring states all the time. The question is really whether or not this situation, where Republicans who do believe this should be public policy, will have this kind of advantage in states where they can ultimately make it happen. I don't know if there are many others beyond Indiana that this can happen where you wouldn't have a reaction like you've had in Wisconsin or Indiana.
Gordon Lafer, back to you at the University of Oregon. You studied Oklahoma. What do you say to that? Is this liable to become a national movement or not?
Well, I don't know, but I think the fact that even the Republicans in the Indiana legislature didn't want this to go to referendum because the recent polling showed more people opposed to it than supporting it shows that I think there are places where people who want this are thinking they're going to lose their strong legislative majorities in November, and this is the time to try to push it through, even if it's ugly. I think, as Professor Wolff said, the question of how ugly people are willing to go is what that will hinge on.
What about the idea that Indiana is unique, it's different, it's not going to be the same as other states, wages and benefits aren't going to go down?
If this was not something that was going to lower wages, it wouldn't be something that employer associations put so much capital into. And I think one of the things that's important to understand is that what the business lobbies are pushing for is that they want unions to operate under rules that they would not accept for themselves. As one of the earlier guests commented, or maybe you commented, federal law requires unions to provide equal representation to everybody in the workplace, even if they're not a member or not dues-paying. Somebody says, I'm anti-union, I don't pay dues, but now I have a problem, I'm not being paid right. The union must provide them full legal representation at no cost. Now, for instance, the Indiana Association of Manufacturers has some services that it provides only to dues-paying members. When the Chamber of Commerce was asked, even in Indiana, would you agree to provide all your services to any interested business, even if they don't pay dues, they said no, because that would put them out of existence. And that's the same, that's exactly what they would like, what they're now are trying to force on labor unions. So, of course, that lowers bargaining power and lowers wages. That's the heart of the policy.
Ed Roberts, you're outnumbered on this program. We'll give you the last word. How do you respond to that? Would your own organization do what companies now will be able to do with regard to the unions?
That analogy is just beyond the pale. By the way, the man who gave it came to Indiana and testified against the bill, so he's certainly not a neutral on this.
But you're saying the
analogy is inapt. At best, it's inapt. At worst, it's something worse than that. Nobody has to join the Indiana Manufacturers Association. If we do something good on taxes or the environment or workers' comp, everybody in business in this state gets the benefit of that, including all of those people who don't belong. But nobody is compelled to pay us in order to manufacture in this state. The analogy is just utterly inapt.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you all very much for being with us. Ed Roberts with the Indiana Manufacturers Association, Gordon Lafer at the University of Oregon, Kenneth Dow Schmidt at Indiana University, Michael Wolf at Indiana University, Purdue University in Fort Wayne, and our earlier guest, Mary Beth Schneider with the Indianapolis Star. Good to have you with us. We'll see what happens next in Indiana.